Good evening to each one. We greet you in Jesus' name tonight, and it is good to be here with you. Look forward to this for some time. It's always makes a little bit of apprehension to preach several messages in a row in front of lots of strange faces. But I'm glad to be here tonight and to be able to share with you. And we want to look at a subject here tonight that I know at least some of you are interested in, and hopefully it applies to everyone. And you'll find out by the end of the message that it does. I think it was this year in June that it was 11 years since I was ordained. And as I look back, I don't think I ever preached a message on courtship, where it was just on courtship. I preached on marriage several times, preached on child training, but never specifically preached a message on courtship. Nelson asked me, do you want me to assign you a title, or do you want to just come up with a title? And I said, go ahead and give me one. So this is what they gave me: Establishing a Foundation in Courtship. I wasn't sure after I was given the topic if that's exactly what I wanted. What is this topic about tonight? Establishing a Foundation in Courtship. Is it talking about courtship? Or is it talking about something more than that? And as I looked at it, I began to realize really the sermon tonight is talking about marriage, but it's talking about the part that comes just before marriage, that helps to make a marriage more secure. And it's scary to get married. I'll say that for the ones that haven't been married yet, because you have two people that were raised in two different homes. Sometimes you find a partner from the same church and you grew up together and you get married, but sometimes you're many, many miles apart and you don't know, have any friends that were the same, but somehow you crossed paths and God led you together and it seemed like it was the thing to do. And it can be a very scary thing. You think you really know each other and then you get married and you find out you don't. So what kind of foundation can we give tonight, today, so that when you get to that place and you find out you're a whole lot different from each other than what you thought you were, that it'll still work? That's what we want to talk about tonight. Now, the title seems to imply that the courtship is extra important when it comes to marriage. It uses the word foundation. We need a foundation. Why is the foundation important? Well, if you think about in a physical sense, I don't know how many builders we have here. Most of a building is built on a foundation. Most of a building is. And the foundation determines the size and the shape and how much you build on it. Has a lot of bearing on how much you can build on something. How much do you have to put in the ground? I look at some of these cell towers they build that are freestanding, and it's several hundred feet tall, and it's three legs that come down together and no cables. We've cleared sites for them different times. How do they get that to stand there with all that wind? Way up on top of a mountain. Well, it has something to do with the foundation, a lot to do with the foundation. That's what makes it work. And so we want to talk about a foundation that's going to stand for a long time. It's true from a construction standpoint, but it's much more true in relationships. I had some help in doing some construction, finishing out my basement. And over the winter when we were slow and had one of the employees help me and framed out some walls, and the one wall was 2 inches off and we didn't catch it till we were hanging drywall. Well, till you're hanging drywall, it's a little too late because the electrical is done, the plumbing's done, and you just don't want to start changing a lot, but the one wall's 2 inches out. It made it a lot more difficult to hang the drywall, to mud the drywall, to put the flooring in. It makes it more difficult. So let's get it off to a good start. In Matthew chapter 7, verse 24 through 27, you know these verses. Therefore, whosoever heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them, I will liken him unto a wise man which built his house upon a rock, and the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and beat upon that house, and it fell not, for it was founded upon a rock. And everyone that heareth these sayings of mine and doeth them not shall be likened unto a foolish man, which built his house upon the sand, and the rain descended, and the floods came, and the winds blew, and beat upon that house, and it fell. And great was the fall of it. What kind of marriage do you want to have? Jesus used the illustration of a foundation to talk about a person's Christian life and preparing for the future. And we really have to watch how we build. This is really important tonight. There's a lot of hearing and a lot of doing that has to happen when you think about courtship. And think about a young man that I worked with that with his courtship. And he talked about his courtship, and we talked about it early on, and these are the things that you should do, and this is how you should do it, and that's great, that's wonderful, that's great. Yep, he just agreed. But he didn't do it. And later on, he found himself in a lot of trouble because while it sounded great, he didn't feel it was important enough to do it. We don't want to end up there. I want to be practical with today's message. There's a sense where maybe there's a lot more pressing issues than a courtship message, especially at my church. We preached it there first, and we don't have very many youth in a youth class, but we have lots of little children. But when you think about the changes that 10 years brings, and 10 years is pretty short, at least when you look back on it, time goes really fast, and there's probably a lot of people in this congregation this evening, that will enter into marriage or be affected by a marriage in the next 10 years, even in the next 4 or 5 years. So we want to give it the time that we need to. If we want our children to be able to have a lifelong friendship, partnership with somebody else, the time to prepare them to be successful in that is right now. We can't wait until our children are 17 years old and suddenly get busy and try to teach them what they need to know. You can't wait till they're a few months before they get married and suddenly say, well, if you're going to have a good relationship, you have to be like this and like this. No, it starts a long time before that. The biggest enemy of healthy relationships, the biggest enemy to that is selfishness. And there's so much work to be done to teach children how to deal with self a long time before dating ever happens. Are we going to talk about ideals tonight? Yes, we're going to talk about ideals. What are ideals? A standard of perfection, beauty, or excellence was one definition. Another definition was an ultimate object or aim of endeavor, a goal. Are ideals just ideals? Are they attainable? Is it just something you talk about, not something you can do? Even the dictionary seemed to acknowledge it a little bit because I looked at the sentence they gave as an example. And this is what it said. He hasn't lived up to his high ideals. Is that the result of ideals? Most important things in life start as an ideal or as a goal, as a vision. They start as you value something and you want something and you make plans for it. You believe it's going to work. After you have attained it, it's no longer an ideal. It's a reality. And there was probably a lot of ideals that were being thrown out last winter when people were thinking about gardening and what they wanted to do. How they were going to lay out their gardens. Was it ideal? Sure it was. Was it more than ideals? Hopefully. You know, I had some ideals too of things I was going to plant and how things were going to work out. And I'd say I'm fairly happy with what I had. But there's times and there's people that think they're going to do something, but they don't plan ahead for it. I think the gardeners who planned ahead, even though it was ideals, and maybe they didn't attain all their ideals, they got a whole lot farther than the ones who didn't plan. And suddenly COVID came along, and it was time to buy everything in the grocery stores, and it was time to plant big gardens because you didn't know what was going to happen if we were going to be able to have food. And so they started throwing seeds out in the ground, not having a clue what they were doing, because they didn't ever try it before. Saw some of that happening. They probably didn't end up with much. Is that the kind of courtship you want to have? Is that kind of marriage you want to have? Kind of suddenly end up in it and not sure how you got here. Well, the people that plan ahead get a lot farther ahead. So we're going to lift up some ideals tonight. We're going to try to live up to them best we can. And we won't realize all our dreams, but hopefully we'll be much farther ahead than if we hadn't. And maybe tonight we're here and we've been past this stage and we think about the mistakes that we made. I'm sure there were some mistakes that are made in a group this large. We don't have to let that be wasted. We can learn from it and we can teach our children differently. We don't have to let it be lost. Well, I'd like to talk about some ideals tonight. And for the next part of my message, I titled it, Children Aren't Ready for Marriage Until... And we're going to finish that sentence. Now, I know if you're thinking about marriage, you don't want to think about yourself as a child. But children aren't ready for marriage until, number one, until they have learned to confront their selfishness. You're not ready to get married until you learn to confront your selfishness. Parents, your children aren't ready for marriage until they've learned to confront it. We know the golden rule, and it's so much easier said than it is lived out. You know that as you would that men should do to you, do you also to them likewise. You know, and this flesh will never be perfect. And it doesn't take two perfect people to get married. But it takes two people that are willing to say no to themselves. We like ourselves pretty much. And if you want to keep... It's kind of like a bank account, a relationship is. You both have to put money in, and you can't take out as much as you put in. And if you do that for the rest of your life, your relationship will be a success. If you both put into it, and only you pull out less. But the problem is most people get into marriages, and they're on their second one, and they're on their third one, on their fourth one. Why? Because they get into it to get out of it what they can get out of it. And after a while, it runs dry. And nobody has anything to put into it. And so they give it up. Children have to learn to be unselfish. We have to be willing to put other people first. Parents, it's our job to set them free from their own selfishness. It's our job. It starts with us as parents. We can't tolerate fighting in our home. There will be some fighting. There always will be. Children are children. Parents can be parents. But we have to teach them how to deal with their disagreements. We have to teach our children to develop good habits, getting up on time, getting up early, getting work done. We have to teach them to be courteous. We have to teach them to be soft-hearted. Teach them to have good manners. Teach them to keep a schedule. There's a lot of things we have to do in teaching our children because they sure won't be ready for marriage until they've learned to confront their selfishness. Number two. Children are not ready for marriage until they have learned to submit to authority. Hebrews 13:17, obey them that have the rule over you and submit yourselves, for they watch for your souls. We're born into this world thinking that we know a lot. We have a hard time submitting to authority. Every one of us struggles with that. And we have to teach children when they're still quite young that they have to obey. Even if they don't understand. You know, I struggle a lot when I see parents with children that aren't even in school yet, and they're trying to reason with them and explain to them why they should be obedient and why they should listen. You know, they're too little to even understand that yet. Children shouldn't be taught why about everything when they're so little. They just need to know. They need to listen. Modern science teaches us, they've done a lot of research, that the reasoning part of your brain isn't fully developed until you're 25. So if you're thinking about this thing of courtship, you better be willing to rely on some advice from other people that are older, unless you want to wait till you're past the age of 25, I guess. Children must learn to listen even when they cannot understand. Why? Because this is how God works. God makes us listen even if we don't understand. We have to learn that when we're little. Now, this wasn't a child training message you thought that you were coming to hear tonight. But I knew there was going to be some parents here tonight, and I knew it's just so important that we learn to submit. Because when hard times come, just like Job, as we heard in devotions tonight, how did Job make it when it came? because he understood this concept. Number three, children are not ready for marriage until they have submitted their life to the Lordship of Jesus Christ. And there's several different references we could go to. But 2 Corinthians 6:14 says, "Be ye not unequally yoked together with unbelievers." Don't be unequally yoked with unbelievers. 1 Corinthians 7:39 says, "Only in the Lord." If you're not old enough to understand your need of salvation and respond accordingly, then you're certainly not old enough to choose a life companion. And I've seen this thing go in cycles. Sometimes you have children that are trying to pair up way too young. Sometimes they're in their 30s and they still haven't figured it out. Where's the balance? I guess we're going to have to speak on both of it tonight. But if you're not old enough to understand your need of salvation, if you haven't crossed that line in your life, you're not near ready to start thinking about who your life partner would be. Parents, your children aren't ready for it. Some parents are happy to see their children paired off at a young age, but that should not be. Marriage is sacred. It's a lifelong relationship. It shouldn't be entered into lightly. Developing a life-changing relationship with Jesus should be our first goal. It's far more important than any other life goal. Number four, children aren't ready for marriage until they have learned moral purity. Not ready for marriage until they've learned moral purity. Proverbs 31:10. There's two verses there. And 11 talks about the virtuous woman. "Who can find a virtuous woman? For her price is far above rubies. The heart of her husband doth safely trust in her, so that he shall have no need of spoil." There is a relationship that has to be built. It takes a virtuous woman. It takes a man who can trust in his wife. It takes a lot of trust between the two of them. All youth are tempted with immorality. Everyone is tempted with that. And we're not ready to date until we've learned to confront that. If we're still feeding our mind on sinful imaginations, impure stories, novels, pictures, if we're enjoying immoral practices, then we're not ready for the fidelity that it takes to have a successful courtship and marriage. We're not ready for that yet if we haven't learned faithfulness. That's another word for fidelity. Parents, I have to talk to you again. Open up that line of communication at a young age. Stay close to them so that when they cross lines they shouldn't, you can sense it and you know something's wrong. You can talk about it. Protection is especially needed in this day and age. We have the internet in our homes. We still get magazines in the mailbox. They still meeting up with neighbors. They still meet up with other people. And we have to teach them what purity is so they know what to do when they face impurity. We need to protect our children when they're quite young. Today's world is teaching children, and it's getting worse every year, that love is lust. Lust is love. It's all the same. But it's not. And we have to understand that. Well, you think maybe you're the only one. You're not. You're not the only one. If you're struggling with immorality or something impure in your life, I'm going to tell you tonight, you're not the only one. And maybe you think that the thing that you struggle with is strange. It's not strange. "There hath no temptation taken you, but such as is common to man." There's people somewhere. Things you don't know about. Many of the older people in the church have struggled with the same things, and they put it in their past. They found forgiveness. They found victory over it. But they're still happy to help a young person that's struggling with it. "But God is faithful, who will not suffer you to be tempted above that you're able, but will with the temptation also make a way to escape, that ye may be able to bear it." Also 1 Peter 2:11, "Dearly beloved, I beseech you as strangers and pilgrims, abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul." If you're going to enter into a courtship that's going to be successful, you need to be able to focus on the things that build a godly marriage and not on lust. You need to have that under control in your life. Number five, children are not ready for marriage until they have learned responsibility. Are they responsible? Am I responsible? Now, I do understand in all of these things that we're talking about tonight that I've done a whole lot of growing since I was 20. I've learned a lot more responsible since I was that age. But if we want to have a successful marriage, marriage is full of responsibilities. And we're not ready to enter into it until we've learned that, you know, work comes before play. Earning and saving money is much more important than spending it. Admitting that we made a mistake is more valuable than not making the mistake. It's important not to make mistakes, but admitting that we made it is tremendously valuable. We're able to take responsibility and make restitutions for our wrongdoings. If we haven't learned those things, then we're not ready for marriage. Marriage takes a lot of commitment. Parents, don't argue on behalf of your children when they get in trouble with some other authority. I see it happen again and again. I see it ruin children. Your child is not perfect. Your child is not perfect. They might be cute, but they're not perfect. If you feel that they are unjustly accused, it will take them much farther in life if you teach them to learn to accept it and learn from that experience rather than to stick up for their rights. We have parents that want their children to stick up for themselves. If you weren't treated right, we're going to set the record straight. We're going to go talk to that school teacher. We're going to go talk to that other adult that spoke into your child's life and straighten them out. You're going to make your child not ready for marriage if that's the approach you're going to take. For the third part of the message, I'm going to look at a few more verses here. I asked this question. Apparently we're allowed to ask questions to make points. Is courtship biblical? Is courtship biblical? Where are the verses? Where can I go to find out what kind of courtship you should have, how it should start, how long it should last, who all should be involved, how many dates you should have, what all you should do on those dates? Where are the verses? Where are the verses about Abraham dating Sarah? Or maybe there's a little bit about Joseph and Mary, not much. Is courtship even biblical? Some churches say it's not. How do you know how to go ask a girl? How do you decide whether it should be a yes or no? Well, let's look at a couple different verses, and then we'll make a few conclusions. Genesis 2. Genesis 2, verse 18, and also verse 24. And the Lord God said, "It is not good that the man should be alone. I will make him an helpmeet for him." Verse 24. "Wherefore shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall cleave unto his wife, and they shall be one flesh." Turn over to Mark chapter 10. A couple places mentioned in the New Testament. But I'm going to read it again here because Jesus reinstated this same thought from that God talked about when he created man. Mark chapter 10, verse 6 to 9. He's talking to the Pharisees here. They're asking him questions. And he says this: "But from the beginning of the creation, God made them male and female. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother and cleave to his wife, and they twain shall be one flesh. So then they are no more twain, but one flesh. Wherefore, what therefore God hath joined together, let not man put asunder." There's also a few more verses I'll just mention here. Proverbs 18:22, "Whoso findeth a wife, findeth a good thing, and obtaineth favor of the Lord." Proverbs 19:14, "A prudent wife is from the Lord." Turn over to 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. 1 Thessalonians 4, I want you to look at these verses here. I learned something I didn't know before. 1 Thessalonians 4, verse 3, 4, and 5. I know there's a couple different interpretations. "For this is the will of God, even your sanctification, that ye should abstain from fornication, that every one of you should know how to possess his vessel in sanctification and honor, not in the lust of concupiscence, even as the Gentiles which know not God. Talking about purity here in relationships. But if you look at verse 4, it says that every one of you should know how to possess his vessel. And if you look it up in the Strong's, and I've looked it up some other places, and not every scholar will interpret it this way, but it could have just as easily written there that every one of you know how to acquire a wife when he says possess a vessel. You'll notice that verse, not the only place that word vessel was used. For you Bible scholars, obtain or acquire a wife. So that kind of gave me I read those three verses and it gave me a little change of thought when I realized that. But if you look it up in Strong's, you'll find that there as well. So what can we conclude from these verses? Well, courtship is biblical when the purpose of it is to glorify God. Is it biblical? Yes, it's biblical when the purpose of it is to glorify God. God planned that men and women would get married. That was God's plan. It was not good that Adam was alone. And I know Paul says what he says when he says he would rather that you wouldn't marry. But he says, he doesn't say he speaks out of commandment. But God's plan was for people to get married. Now, not everybody does. Doesn't say that it's God's plan for everybody, but as a whole, that is God's plan. If we're pursuing a relationship simply for the benefit that it gives to me, how can it be of the Lord? Then that courtship probably is not a godly courtship if it's just about us. But if our courtship is for the purpose of bringing honor and glory to God, then it is biblical. Jesus taught that marriage is only for time. That's made me sad sometimes when I think about that. But marriage is only for time. And when you die, that marriage vow is broken. You're no longer held to that. I think in eternity, our focus is going to be so much more on God and on Christ. Marriage won't mean anything anymore. It only serves a purpose in time. The purpose of marriage is to propagate the human race. It is to help us remain faithful. And it's also to teach us about the relationship of Christ in the church. It does. It teaches us a lot about that. Number two, courtship is biblical when marriage is the goal. Is it dating? Is it courtship? If dating means it's just for fun or it's just for a fling, it's just for a social benefit, then let's not date. It can seem to have that connotation. It should be serious. But marriage is the goal of courtship. And so we need to enter into it that way. Some young people, we can tend to view courtship as, you know, when I finally find that boyfriend or girlfriend, that's the end. I've arrived. And it's not. It's only a means. Dating is a way to get acquainted. It's a decision-making process. Lots of things come at us during that time. But marriage is the goal. Courtship is not the goal. Christian marriage is ordained of God. If courtship helps us to have a godly home, then it is a good thing. What are some building blocks of a Christian courtship? Thinking about building a foundation, what are some of those building blocks? I've written down six things here in the last part of the message. Six basic things for a proper Christian courtship. And you hoped that I would get practical. Number one, it is only begun with proper consent. Proper consent. First of all, consent of God. A lot of prayer. You should pray about it. And only in the Lord. We already talked about that before. And if it's not something that God's leading you into, but you really, really want it, don't do it. Or you won't be happy. Don't do it. And we need the consent of our parents. Both parties need the consent of their parents. Seeing people try to do it otherwise, and it causes a lot of problems. When I called my future father-in-law up, I found out later he was already in bed, but he answered the phone. Didn't know it was me, but I wanted to call late enough in the evening that nobody else would pick up the phone. But he gave me permission. Thought it would be fine. And that's a good thing for young men to do. I know it's been encouraged a lot in the last number of years, but it wasn't always that way. But you want a good relationship. Start there. And maybe he'll ask you some hard questions. So be prepared to tell the truth. But don't let that scare you off. Number two, building blocks of a Christian courtship. Number two is Christ must be central. Christ must be in the middle. You know what that means? That means when we get together for a date, for a time together, that we're going to somewhere along the way, and you might as well do it right away, we're going to take time to read the Bible together and pray together. Oh no, that's something we can start once we're married. Well, if you don't start it before that, you probably won't start it once you're married. Take time in your dates to read the Bible together and pray together. That opens up a spiritual connection, a strong spiritual connection that we need to have a long-lasting marriage. Christ is central. This means that the relationship is to bring honor and glory to God. And if we get to the place where we find out this relationship is not bringing glory to God, then probably it needs to be broken off. Or it needs to be changed. Something else needs to happen. Christ must be central. Number three, building blocks to proper Christian courtship. Our dates need to have a purpose. They need to have a plan. Idleness is a devil's workshop. We need to have a plan. We need to have a plan to include important things like church, like family events, include other friendships. I've seen young people get busy dating and all they could think about was their special friend and spend lots of time together, and they forget about all their other friends till a year or two later when they want to get married, and suddenly they realize they've abandoned a lot of relationships. Don't let that happen. You can include other people in your times together. Maintain other friendships as well. But dates must have, your time together should have a purpose, or you end up places you don't want to be. Number four, communication needs to be meaningful and open. And that's one of the reasons why I stress Bible reading and prayer together, and why I want to stress that you have a purpose and a plan. Because the communication needs to be the same thing as well. It needs to go somewhere. It needs to accomplish something. It's not just, I'm glad we can be together and it's so much fun to be with you, and you're special to me, and all those things. I mean, that's okay if that's part of the relationship. But it needs to go so much deeper than that. You need to talk about important things. You're going to be spending the rest of your life with that person. You think you can work that out later. You know, texting wasn't even a thing when I was courting. Maybe that shows how old I am. We didn't even text. We didn't have the option of texting. I didn't even have a cell phone. Still not sure what to think about it. Let's just make sure that our communication is upbuilding. We're going to have to talk about difficult subjects. We're going to have to talk about our differences. We're going to have to talk about likes and dislikes. We're going to have to talk about ideals. We're going to have to talk about convictions and preferences. A lot to talk about. Number five, building blocks to a proper Christian courtship. Standards are kept. Standards are kept. God has a standard, whether we do or not. God has a standard, and we need to keep God's standard. The ultimate focus of dating is compatibility. It's not fuzzy feelings. And feelings get in the way of sound judgment. So it's wise to set perimeters for your courtship, and you need to set them. Very first times that you are together, you're scared of each other then. After a while, you're not scared of each other anymore. And that's why we stress hands off. Because when you start to break down those barriers, it goes pretty fast. It goes faster and faster. You can end up in a lot of trouble. Lack of restraint in courtship undermines fidelity in marriage. If you can't have restraint in your courtship, how are you going to expect that kind of faithfulness once you're married. You don't think that far when you're dating, but you need to. And the last thing I have written down here, building block of a proper Christian courtship. The last step is establishing a Christian home. Establishing a Christian home. For God's glory, a result of pursuing His will. Everything that we have in life is God's. Everything that we have. It's also fitting to read those verses from Job. I came naked, I'm leaving naked. Everything in the meantime is God's. And He gives some people, He gives us all differing measures. But even the relationships that we have with other people, God gives them to us. He leads us into relationships with different people. And we have to view it that way. Your courtship is a relationship that God gives you. So pray for God's will. I don't think there is exactly one right way to do it. I'm not going to sit down and say all the little details that you need to go through, and this is the end result. I don't think it happens that way. I don't think there is just one right person. There could be many qualified. And you have to find that only right one that God had planned for you in eternity past. No. Find someone that meets the qualifications that God gives. We have to continue to pray for God's will and stay close to God, and God's Spirit will lead us. We can't neglect that. And it's so easy to do when you're a young Christian and you come to faith and you want to read the Bible and you want to pray and you're really excited about what God has given to you and you put a lot of focus on that, and it's a good thing. But then you go on and life has a lot of distractions, and courtship can be one of those things that can distract people and make them extra busy, and after a while they forget about and don't stay as close to God as they should. Let's not let that happen. Let's stay close to God. Well, I hope that we plan for a lot of Christian homes to be established. If the Lord tarries, we do not know how long that will be. But parents, let's not forget that these little ones on our laps, we can make a difference for the rest of their life and the marriage that they're going to have by how we teach them when they're still quite small. Let's kneel for prayer.